You don't have to go very far in the Rogue Valley to find evidence of the importance of pears. There are streets named for pears, businesses named Pear Tree, this or that, and the springtime Pear Blossom Festival, and of course the other end of the pear season, harvest. Many orchards began picking and packing pears a couple of weeks ago. A lot of money rides on the quality of the pear crop, and there were reasons to believe as the season began that this could potentially be an off year. Namas Incorporated is one of the larger pear companies in the region, and Barry Tibbetts is with Namas and our guest in the studio. Barry, welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
Tell us about how long you've been involved in agriculture generally.
With the pear industry, I've been servicing that industry for approximately 30 years.
Really? So you were a guy who traveled around and sold products to the orchards?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Consulted with all the orchardists.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you do now for Namas?
I am their consultant, their crop consultant, mm-hmm. with the programs for protecting insects and disease and
all kinds of things. So there are lots of challenges. I mean, this is not like a business where you get to keep your stuff enclosed in a factory. You know, all your product is hanging out there in the trees all most of the year, and lots of things can happen.
There's a lot of variables, Mother Nature, you know, and all the other insects that can be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this was anticipated, I think, to be a fairly hard year for pears. Is that a fair assessment?
It's true. We had an early frost in March that affected quite a bit of the blossom. So it tended to put out a lighter crop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And does it actually kill off parts of the blossom? Is that what happened?
Yes. Uh-huh. Right. Mm-hmm. It makes the pears, kills all the seeds. So.
Were there any issues? I mean, thinking back even further, because I remember last winter, we had basically the one major snow in December. But even before that, there was a very deep freeze. And I remember hearing that there were some effects on potential effects on crops from that as well.
It tended not to affect it as much as we thought it might.
Really?
Yeah, really. They're a pretty hardy tree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they can take some pretty cold temperatures.
All right, so give us the general run of things. I mean, when do you start seeing fruit appear? I mean, when does it actually turn into fruit from the blossoms? And what kind of things do you have to do to it over the course of the growing season?
Well, after April, the fruit starts setting from the bloom, and we'll run into fungus problems. There's scab, which is caused by rain, which hasn't been a major problem like it has in the past. We haven't experienced as much rainfall in the early spring as we have normally in the older years. And we used to fly on a lot of material in this area. But with urban encroachment and more housing and less orchards, the aerial applications are no longer here.
We're talking about aerial applications,
yeah.
Pesticides, things like that?
Yeah, fungicides. Mm-hmm. Yeah, uh-huh, yeah. Because in the springs, sometimes the ground was so wet and muddy, you couldn't pull a tractor through the orchard.
Oh, well, that's why you do the aerial stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, just anything else on wheels would get bogged down.
There was no way we could get through the orchard. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
So what kinds of pears have already been harvested or are being taken in right now?
Let's see. They're pretty much all in. The Bartletts, the Camise are just about finishing. Harry and David just about finished. Mm-hmm. The Bosque are in full swing, and that's our big pear, our major pear that we have grown here in the valley. And that will go on probably for another 2 weeks. It's a very early harvest this year. Probably close to 2 weeks, which is a good thing because water has been an issue this year. And they'll be shutting off the irrigation water. So an early harvest is a plus.
Has there been less water over the course of the season?
No, we've had the water. It's just that there's not the amount of water left.
All right, so you got it. So what helps you decide when to do the harvest? I mean, is it just a function of the calendar? Is it a function of when the water is going to get cut off? Is it a function of the fruit being ready?
It has a lot. It has a function of degree days, mm-hmm. hours, degree hours. It also has a pressure function, and fruit is picked by the pressure of its internal makeup. And what we do is we'll use a pressure meter and puncture the pear, and it'll read a pressure reading. And each variety has a different pressure where it's determined that it's time to pick, because then they'll go into cold storage, produce sugars, and then come out and ready for fresh market. But it's the pressure of the fruit that determines when we will pick it.
Is there a puncture per tree or a puncture per acre? I mean, how much?
Oh, no, there's three punctures per per fruit.
Really?
Yes.
Each individual one?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll give three. Sometimes, mainly just, there's one main one that we want to do. Sometimes I'll be in the field and I'll do three just to check the sun side of the pear, the shade side of the pear, and yeah.
All right, there's just so much involved in this that I think people never realize. You talk about the sun side of the pear, the shade side of the pear, and it probably therefore makes a difference even which side of the tree they're located on.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Will you have one tree that'll get drastically different pears from
no.
one side to the other?
No. No, not drastically different. No.
Mm-hmm. But how different?
Oh, it may be a half pound, quarter pound. Yeah.
Over those?
Oh, during the day when you do the pressures of mm-hmm. the tree, of the fruit you've picked off the tree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're talking to Barry Tibbetts from Namas Incorporated about the pear harvest. The busk is in full swing. The Bartletts and Comice are already in, apparently, and looking at what the size of the crop was this year. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with comments or questions. 800-838-3760 across the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. All right, so how early is this then? I mean, you're talking about the harvest.
It's about 2 weeks, mm-hmm. about 2 weeks earlier than normal.
All right, so normally you'd be just getting into the
boss.
The Bartlett and the Comice now? Or?
Bartlett's be finished. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. We'll go a lot of times with the Bosque into October.
That late?
Yes.
Okay, and that is just starting now, you say?
The Bosque have... No, they've been going for a week.
They're full swing.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, they're pretty much in full swing now.
It's about a 2 week cycle on harvest?
No. No, we'll start in July and usually end about the end of September, 1st of October.
Okay, so a much longer time then.
Yeah, well, there's all the different varieties. Mm-hmm. The earlier varieties, the Bartlett start, and then there's a lot of different varieties other than the Bartlett, Comice, Anjou, and Bosque. Those are the four main varieties that people are aware of. Mm-hmm. But then there's different strains.
So are all the different strains then used generally just as fruit you eat? I mean, you just eat it as a pear, or is a lot of the stuff going off into purees and juices and other stuff?
After it's processed in the packing house, there's the fresh pack, which is graded and then goes to fresh market, and then there's others that will go to juice and puree and things like that.
All right, and the decision, is it totally a cosmetic one on which ones go to fresh market and which ones go to...
Basically, yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, right.
Have the market expectations continued to go up? I mean, I know that there are a lot more people who are trying to eat local food, people trying to eat organic, stuff like that. Don't know if the cosmetics are as important with food as they were perhaps a few years ago.
Yeah, it's still important with the buyers. So, I mean, we try to get aesthetically pleasing of fruit as it looks, you know, as it can look. So, you know, we're shifting probably mm-hmm. a little bit.
In some respects, is the crop a little better this year? You mentioned that there's no scabbing from the rain, but you also had no hail to deal with this year that I'm aware of.
The heat had a little bit of effect on the fruit. It probably didn't size as well. The heat tends to shut down the trees a little bit, so there's not as much transpiration, and the fruit really doesn't grow as well with the intense heat that's continued day after day after day.
So smaller by a percentage?
Smaller by a small percentage, really. But it has a tendency to cause the fruit to be a little bit smaller.
You mentioned degree hours as one of the gauges for when to harvest. Is it pretty much just how much exposure that the fruit has had to a certain level of heat? Is that what you're adding up there?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. The average of the highs and lows. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm surprised it's only 2 weeks early that you're taking stuff.
Yeah.
In.
Right. I know. Yeah.
Very, very hot summer with a record number of high degree days or triple digit days in July for Medford, certainly. Are most of the orchards in the immediate Medford area?
Yes. We have one block in Grants Pass. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, you also have an operation in Washington, too, I understand, right?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, and you had some issues there this year.
It was a bit of a fire that got a little close to the orchard, actually went right through the edge. Yeah.
Really? So did it damage the fruit trees at all?
Some. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And are the fruit trees able to survive that and produce, or are the fruit just damaged by the heat, or what happens?
We'll see.
Don't know yet.
Oh, it's next year, yeah.
Oh, okay. Right. Got it. Yeah. Let's take a call. We have Mark in Redding on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking fruit harvest with Barry Tibbetts from Namas Incorporated.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Which of the do pears increase in fruit sugar after they're harvested, and which ones, if so, which ones increase the most?
The fruit produces the sugars while it's in cold storage. They keep them in cold storage for a minimum of a month before shipping them out, and the sugars just continue to grow. And the ones that, you know, probably have some of the highest sugars is the Camise, will be pretty, gain a lot of sweet, and the Bartlett. Not so much on the Bosque.
Do you have some experience with this yourself, Mark?
No, I was just curious because I've, over the years, heard that bananas are the only fruit that actually increase in fruit sugar after harvest, and so I was kind of surprised to hear him say that earlier in the program, that they increase in fruit sugars.
Right. Yeah, well, they're in cold
storage. There's just a rumor about bananas being the only one, but that's just something I heard.
Just a vicious rumor told by bananas, yes.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate it. And thanks for the level of insight there. So they're just laid in cold storage for a while? I mean, how cold?
Yes.
In about a month, you say?
Yeah, just to get the carbohydrates to build up and switch and then create and build the sugars.
Is this something like a fermentation process?
Mm.
Not that I'm, yeah, mm. Not a couple of scientists
but,
in this room.
Yeah, but they do keep them like at, I believe it's 32 degrees. They won't freeze until 28.
Got it.
Yeah.
So anybody growing pears had to know that at the outset that this was not necessarily going to be a great year because of some of the atmospheric conditions and the fact there really wasn't seen to be a lot of water available given the lack of snowpack available for irrigation districts and so forth. At the outset of a year like this, then, I mean, do you have somewhat different strategies for how you're going to manage the orchards over the course of a year when you think the yield might be lower anyway?
I think we pretty much would be status quo. We've done a lot of revamping irrigation systems. In the past, you know, years ago, we used to flood irrigate all these orchards, and we don't flood irrigate them anymore. A lot of them are sprinklered and dripped, and so water conservation has become a real big plus for the industry.
And I imagine in fairly dry years, it probably does pay off pretty quickly to go for a more sophisticated irrigation system.
Yes, it does. Yes. Uh-huh. The water seems to hold out a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you haven't been with Namas that long, I understand, but you've probably had a chance to look as a consultant around the West for a long time, I would think, at fruit orchards. And is the business very different from what it was 20 or 30 years ago?
Absolutely. Yeah. 30 years ago when I started, there was a lot of the old-style plantings of pears on a 25 by 25-foot planting. And those were from the old horse and buggy wheel cart pull-through type orchards. But and just the trees got so massive. Now there's, and those were 69 trees per acre. Now there's as many as 750 trees to the acre. We'll put them on an 8 by 12 foot planting instead of a 25 by 25. And the Camise tend to do well. The Bosque are a very willowy type tree. They get pretty big, so they don't do well in a small confined planting, but we've increased the trees per acre to where the production with the acres lost, the production is pretty close to the same.
So that's an interesting thing to think about then, because as I've watched over the course of living here almost 30 years myself in the Rogue Valley, watch after orchard disappears, because when the trees are no longer inactive, you have to bulldoze them, right?
Yes.
Keep the pests away.
Yes, but As the story goes, a pear tree will not die of old age, only from pest or disease.
Ah, but watching the acreage shrink, then it really hasn't been much of a factor. It sounds like in production, because you're getting so much more out of each acre.
There's the production per acre has definitely increased. Yes, and with better techniques of frost protection. In the old days, you know, with the smudge pots, and we'd turn the valley brown. Now it's a lot of overhead sprinklers, which encapsulate the pear blossoms, and they won't freeze because they can't get below the 32 with the encapsulation of the ice and the wind machines. So they'll do perimeter heating with smudge pots and then circulate the heat with the wind machines.
I'm going on memory only here, but it didn't seem like there needed to be a lot of orchard heating during this particular growing season.
No, there hasn't.
Really?
Last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So do you end up using up a lot in fuel and the cost of both the heaters and the
Yes,
and
it can be pretty costly. If it's a cold spring, it can cost a lot of money to keep the fruit on the tree.
Huh. All right, so given the fact you didn't have to do that much of it this year, but the pears are small, I mean, is it going to come out about an average year then in terms of income per pear?
I think it'll be close to what we call an average year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is anybody looking down the road and looking at long-term forecasts and seeing what might be ahead for the orchard business for future years?
No. I think we'll just keep watering them and picking them.
You worry about what's in front of you at the moment.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. All right, well, best of luck, and thanks so much for joining us to talk about the pear harvest this year.
All right,
Very much appreciate it. Barry Tibbetts is with Nalmus Incorporated, which is one of the larger orchard operations in the greater Medford area. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff.